may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency relies on information and technology to carry out its mission, protecting human health and the environment. The agency depends on the availability of and access to high-quality, timely, and reliable information and the technology that makes it all happen. Both are strategic assets to an agency that understands managing these resources efficiently and effectively is key to it being successful. What is the information technology strategy for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency? How is EPA modernizing its technology infrastructure and ensuring its IT investments align with its overall mission? And how is the EPA providing balanced stewardship between information and technology? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Malcolm Jackson, Assistant Administrator of the Office of Environmental Information and Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Malcolm, welcome. It's great to have you.
Well, Michael, thank you for having me.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. Ken, always good to have you back.
Great being back.
Malcolm, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you can give us a brief overview of the history and evolving mission of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. When was it created and how has its mission evolved to date?
Well, EPA was created back in 1970 by President Nixon. And it really came about from a genesis of a need for a focus on environment and cleaning up our environment. The year before President Nixon created EPA, we had an incident with the Cuyahoga River where there just was so many toxins in the river and it caught on fire. And the president felt a very strong need to have a focus that really looked at establishing and enforcing environmental protection standards and looking at research and how can we do a better job of protecting our environment. But what it's evolved to, and I would say, is that for the most part, it hasn't changed. It's shifted a bit in the sense of there's more of a focus around human health. When you think about our mission today around protecting human health and the environment in which we live, environment being the land, the water, the air, and drawing that correlation to the human health side. I think the focus on human health has been the biggest difference.
So it's such a critical mission. I'd like to get a sense of the scale of operations you support. Would you describe how EPA is organized, the size of its budget, number of full-time employees, and its geographical footprint?
Well, EPA has over 17,000 employees, and we're headquartered here in Washington, D.C. We have 10 regional offices across 10 metropolitan areas and with research laboratories all across the country. We cover about 48 cities where we have offices and representations in those cities and 31 states. So that gives you a perspective of our reach. And I add one other point is, although we focus primarily on the U.S., we look broadly from a global perspective. So we're involved with activities, environmental activities beyond just the United States borderline, because we recognize the importance of environmental protection, and we want to be stewards for the environment and looking more broadly outside of our walls. And as an example, you think about China or you think about Japan. Japan just this past year had the earthquake and the tsunami. We work very closely with them around the environmental aspects of clean air and looking at it from the perspective and really recognizing that air that's being toxic air that are in other parts of the world eventually moves here. So we really want to look at it more holistically. So that gives you somewhat of a perspective of us from a scope perspective in terms of where we're located geologically. From a budgetary perspective, just this past year on FY 2012, we had a budget of around $8.5 billion, and we're looking at 13, the 13 budget, which was just submitted and on February 13th, around 8.3. Now, that's what's been submitted. But as you know, we have to go through a number of protocols with regard to what the president submits and what Congress approves.
So now that you provided us a sense of the larger organization, could you tell us more about your area? Specifically, what are your responsibilities as the assistant administrator for EPA's Office of Environmental Information and CIO? Maybe you can tell us a little bit of the day in the life.
That's a very good question. I actually wear multiple hats as the assistant administrator and the chief information officer, and I'll break them apart. I'll talk about each one of them separately. As the assistant administrator, I actually run a program. It's the Toxic Release Inventory Program, and that's the program where toxics that are released into our environment, we monitor those toxins. There's over 600 toxins that have been identified as human carcinogens. In a nutshell, what that means is these are chemicals that can cause cancer. And we want to track what those chemicals are and make it public, all around transparency and ensuring the public is aware of what information or rather what toxics are being released in their environment. So that's one side of the shop that I manage. And this has been around for a number of years, and it's won quite a few awards, our Toxic Release Inventory Program. The other side of it is being the agency technologist or managing agency technology matters. And this covers a couple areas. There's the operational aspects of it, really the running of the shop, the hardware side of it, the software side of it. And then there's a policy aspect of it, too, thinking of what policies do we need to put in place from a technology perspective. This covers all the, managing all of IT asset management. It covers cybersecurity. It also covers records management, all of the records that we have. How do we manage those effectively? How do we keep track of those records? Electronic records, it's a number of things from that perspective. One other component is FOIA, Freedom of Information Act. We receive requests from the general public around information with regards to our agency, and we manage that. So I'm the chief FOIA officer as well. And additionally, we manage libraries. We have libraries all around the country which we house environmental information and make it available. So American citizens can go in and visit our libraries and learn quite a bit of information about environmental matters. And then finally, I also manage quality systems. So all of our quality systems for the agency, ensuring that we're providing the highest quality systems, that we have best practices from a quality perspective around data collection, data availability, information that's being released. That's all managed within our quality system program as well.
With such a robust portfolio, could you outline for us the three top challenges that you have faced in your position and how you've sought to address those challenges?
That's a really tough question when you think about just three challenges. There's always to try and prioritize and narrow it down to three is difficult. But I gave that a bit of thought, and really it falls into three categories. First being maximizing IT investments, looking at it from the perspective, how do we ensure that we're getting the best possible outcomes from the investments that we make from an IT perspective? Using taxpayer dollars, as you know, they pay for everything in which we do, and I want to make sure that taxpayers, American citizens, understand and know that we're spending their money in the most appropriate manner. The way of doing that is we've instituted an IT governance model, a really strong focus around IT governance, and how do we ensure that we're investing monies in the most appropriate manner, that we're not having duplicity, that we're not wasting taxpayer dollars. And this is across, this government model spans across the entire agency. It enables us to have transparency and input and collaboration into where we're investing. The second one is around, I'll call it a one agency approach. It's looking at how do we ensure we're doing things once and using it many times. Getting the most out of our investments. Ensuring that we have collaboration, transparency around the highest priority activities for our agency as a whole. And my approach for that is really focusing on strengthening partnerships, mm-hmm. looking to reach out beyond just the walls of my office, looking to reach out beyond the walls of this agency. I want to make sure that we're getting the best business value out of our investments. And I feel very strongly on this statement I'm about to make is, We do great work at EPA. prior to me getting here, the IT organization did a tremendous amount of good work. But all great ideas don't resonate or even begin within EPA. So I look to extend beyond the walls of EPA and looking into my, I'll call it the federal family, and looking for opportunities to leverage some of the work that they're doing there. And so you have this one agency approach, and with an eye on, are there other agencies or departments that may be doing something that we may be able to leverage or better leverage within our agency to get good outcomes from? The third one would be around cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is probably the hottest item out there today, and I'll tell you why. Everything else that we do, you can kind of see it and plan for it. There's a bit of uncertainty with some technology in the sense of technology moves so very fast. But cybersecurity, you don't know where you're going to get hit. It's a challenge. It's something which I don't know when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, but I've got to be able to respond to it. So we want to make sure that we provide protection and have a response model that supports what we're trying to accomplish within EPA.
I don't know if you want to expand on what makes an effective leader, but I'd also be interested in understanding who's influenced your leadership style.
It's interesting you say that. I think that the characteristics of a good leader is someone who's a visionary, who understands where he wants to take an organization. I mean, you've got to have strong leadership skills, which are different than management skills. You think of management as you have an activity and you need to manage that activity. When I think of a leader is someone who thinks of where do we need to take an organization and have vision of where you want to take it. So that's the visionary aspects of it. I also think that a leader needs to be driven because as a visionary, you're looking to take an organization somewhere else, and that's change. The leader needs to really be driven to take an organization where it needs to go. Someone, as a leader, that's a characteristic that I think is crucial toward being an effective leader. A third one would be a coach. I talked about vision. I talked about driven. And you know the tie-in to change management. You've got to coach people along the way, so that they believe you, that they understand where you're going, and you've got to help them get there. The fourth one, I think, is a partner, because you're working with business colleagues who have a mission, an objective in their role, and you need to partner with them to ensure that what they are looking to accomplish, you're bringing the technology leadership and the path of getting there. And the fifth one that I really believe is important is around listening. Listening is a critical skill. When I first came into my role, the first thing I did was go out and meet with folks at various levels within the organization. And my intent there was just to listen to what they had to say. So when you couple those five characteristics that I just described, vision, driven, coach, partner, and listener, I think those are the key characteristics of a leader. Now, you may ask, how did I get there? I didn't really have a particular person that I would point to and say, that's the one who I want to be like. I've worked at a number of different organizations in a lot of different industries, and I've been very fortunate that I've had a number of great, great leaders and a number of great coaches and mentors along the way. And my leadership style is a blend of a number of different leaders. Some were great at leading teams. Others were great visionaries. And some were great coaches. What I've done is kind of taken pieces of all of them and used that in building the characteristics of my leadership style.
What is the information technology strategy for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency? We will ask its Chief Information Officer, Malcolm Jackson, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What are the seven management imperatives all government executives need to know? How is DoD improving its business operations? What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextJet? How is New York City shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And what about power, security, and leadership in the 21st century? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Malcolm Jackson. Assistant Administrator of the Office of Environmental Information and Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. Malcolm, in our last segment, you identified and pretty much illustrated how important environmental information is for EPA. It's a strategic asset in your efforts to protect human health and the environment. I'd be interested to understand how your IT strategy facilitates this, and what are your overarching strategic goals, and how do you support this mission?
Well, one of my priorities was to establish a strategic direction for EPA, and EPA as an agency has a strategic plan, but we didn't have a IT strategic plan. So we did a bit of work early on around establishing a strategic plan, and I will tell you, one of my findings is that strategy, IT strategy from a at a federal level is a bit more challenging than it is at in the private sector. My entire career was in the private sector. From a government perspective, just given the funding models and lack, at least on the civil side, of multi-year funding of projects, is a bit more challenging. But having said that, we have a model in place and an approach with it. And what we're doing is looking at it from a pragmatic perspective. What are the pillars that we want to anchor things on, and how do we begin to build a roadmap toward the future that takes into account the funding model that exists today and aligns with what we're trying to accomplish as an agency as a whole when you think about our mission as a whole. Within that, from my my view, I'm looking at what are the things that are critical. So off the top of my head, I'm just going to name a couple. With this proliferation of mobile devices, we want to make sure that we are aligned mobily. I have actually said that we're going to have a mobile-first policy at its highest level. And what I mean by that is if you're developing an application that will go in the hands of any of our EPA employees that are outside the agency or that are mobile, you need to design it for a mobile-first. Any type of application that has citizen-facing implications, we want you to design it for the mobile first, mobile devices. Now, we don't have all of the policies in place. I recognize that. But I'm using terms like we want to march toward the horizon. We may never get to the sun, but we're going in that direction. And we're moving away from going where technology is today to going to where technology is moving. So making very strategic decisions that are pragmatic in nature, that align with where we need to take the agency as a whole. And that's the view that I think is best works for us here within EPA, particularly within the federal government. I don't believe in building these big, elaborate strategic plans that sit on a desk, and by the time you completed them, then the ink is dried, they're no longer valid.
So, you know, given that EPA carries out multiple and complex missions, your information technology requirements and portfolio reflect that complexity. Would you elaborate on your efforts to foster an enterprise view and break down silos where it makes sense? You mentioned the one EPA earlier. So what kind of challenges have you encountered in pursuing a one EPA vision as outlined by Administrator Jackson?
I would say that your opening, I actually would spin a statement you made a little differently. You said that we have a complex mission as an agency. Actually, I don't think it's that complex. When you think about a world of our mission of protecting human health and the environment in which we live in, what we're saying is we want people to be healthy. We want to have clean air. We want to have clean water. We want people to live on clean land. To me, that's really not complex. That's simple. Common sense approach toward the environment. And I think that's how Administrator Jackson looks at it. I think that's how President Obama looks at it. And I would say that I think that's how most people should look at the environment and what we do at an environmental protection agency. From your other question around our portfolio or our one EPA approach to it, a lot of the program offices at EPA, they were siloed in nature in a sense of how they were managed, how they managed technology and business practices. Now we're stepping back, looking at it, and looking for opportunities where we can look holistically across the agency and having taken this opportunity to go and design things that leverage one approach, one common business practice, one common technology solution. We want to build things once and use it many times. And we want to be able to share data. We want to be able to share best practices. And we want to be able to open up collaboration across the agency in a way that will maximize our investments and provide a better service and product to the American citizens as a whole.
So in this time of budget austerity where you have to invest your budget wisely, you know, I'd like to explore the IT capital investment process at EPA. You know, what have you done to strengthen EPA's IT capital investment process to ensure that investment decisions are mission aligned and cost justified?
Capital investments are critical to any organization. And as you think about the growth of an organization, really pointing an organization in the direction where you want to go, you need to have a solid capital investment model in place. Within EPA, from day one coming in the door, one of the first things I wanted to do was take a look at IT investments and looking at them holistically across the agency. So I actually partnered with Barbara Bennett, who is our chief financial officer, and together we took an approach that we wanted to look at all of the major IT investments within the agency and bringing a more collaborative view to it, more transparent view to it than what has been done in the past. We wanted to ask probing questions. We wanted to challenge people, not to just challenge people, but challenge them to think differently. Challenge them to view things from one EPA or agency-wide perspective and open up their minds toward a different way of doing things. Over the past 2 years, we've looked at all of the major IT investments within the agency. And it was a good first look at where we were investing our dollars. Now what we're doing is stepping back and taking another fresh look at it, because it wasn't all the IT investments. We learned a lot in those 2 years. And what we're doing now is taking a harder look at a lower level within the agency at IT investments, specifically with an interest around investments that may not have a large dollar number associated with it, but has a larger impact on the broader set of employees, or that may have reputational risk to the agency as a whole. So that puts a different lens on it, and we're just beginning those type of investments. And we've got the model in place for the common templates. We've got the engagement in place where we have our investment team working with across the agency with all the various program offices to receive information and to ask the types of questions. But we're learning. We are learning on this. And I think that it's going to evolve over time. I'm comfortable where we are at this point, but I still believe there's opportunities in the future where we can better realize our investments and receive the type of a better outcome just through this collaboration for capital investments.
We talked a little bit about the IT governance. And how does governance enable you to optimize resources across the agency?
Governance provides us with the transparency of what's going on within the agency. And you can look for opportunities to share resources. You can look for opportunities to have inclusion from other offices who may be impacted either upstream or downstream. It provides us with an opportunity to, and I continue to make the statement, is maximize our investments. Because if you're aware of what's going on, you can build collaborations, you can build communities, and these communities will help you get to a better outcome. So that if once you build it, you've built it with input from a broader set of resources, and you don't run the risk of having to either rebuild it or build it again. So I'm all about optimizing our investment, optimizing our resources. I'm all about maximizing our investments.
Malcolm, there's a lot of efforts around infrastructure modernization, and you hear a lot about it. But what are you folks doing in the area of data center consolidation? I'm more interested to know, what are some of the challenges and benefits of pursuing such an approach?
Well, I was very fortunate that we within EPA were already down the path of practices that help us with data center consolidation. We don't have the numbers of data centers that a number of agencies or departments may have. So we took the approach of looking at how do we optimize the number of locations that we have that may be storing server rooms. So looking at any of our major campuses, there were multiple server rooms in these at a particular campus. We shrunk it, shrunk those numbers, and that helped us from that perspective. If you think of it as moving things to one location and leveraging common or one set of resources to support those locations. And there's also energy optimization opportunities that exist with that as well. So we capitalized on some of that. Some of the other things that we've done is around virtualization. We've done quite a bit of work around virtualization. In fact, currently we've got 70% of our environment virtualized. And we have a goal to get to an even higher number in the near future. It's something that we see the real benefits from. It also helps us with our greening efforts as an HCN. As being EPA, we're all about being green. The other part of it is when virtualization is the first step in going toward cloud computing, and it helps enable us to make that next step toward cloud services.
What are you doing in the area? Actually, it's interesting because you mentioned virtualization and your movement towards it. What are you doing in the area of cloud computing? Is there specific services that you're putting or functions that you're putting on the cloud?
Well, cloud is, as you know, with the 25-point plan, it's a cloud-first initiative that OMB has mandated, and we align with that. I support that. I think it's the right thing to do. Within EPA, we have a private cloud within our data center. A private cloud allows us to be able to leverage common services, shared services for our enterprise configuration management, for log management, for resource monitoring. And in fact, we're moving our help desk to cloud, and one common help desk service will be offered across the entire agency. We're in the process of moving in that direction now, and I feel very confident that we will get there in the very near future. And that's going to provide a tremendous amount of opportunities for us as an agency around shared tickets and managing of tickets across the agency. But that's the private side of it. The bigger question becomes public cloud. We're in the process of designing a framework of what for us should go to a public cloud. There's certain information that we may not be as comfortable going to a public cloud at this point. Mm-hmm. I think the whole topic of cloud is going to evolve over time. Where we are today won't be where we are 2 years from now. So we will take a pragmatic approach to our cloud. We will provide guidance and direction to our colleagues within the agency on what should go to cloud, or rather to the public cloud, and we will continue to make advancements in that area.
Well, you mentioned earlier, you alluded to your efforts around sustainability, and given the mission of EPA, I want to actually have you elaborate on your efforts to be good environmental stewards and move toward green computing. Could you elaborate a little bit more on what you're doing in the area of green computing?
Well, that's the foundation of what we do at the EPA, and as the technology leader, it's a focus for me and a focus of my organization. We're looking at it in a couple of areas. One is we're looking to optimize computer utilization. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole virtualization piece of it. How do we move from a world of mini servers to a world of the right number of servers in a virtualized environment? That's going to cut down on our energy consumption. It's going to cut down on e-waste. Mm-hmm. So that'd be the first step. The second step is around minimizing energy consumption. So buying machines that use the right amount of energy consumption, not overbuying from an energy utilization perspective. So we take a really hard look at that. Third is around maximizing use of energy-efficient infrastructure. We partner with the Department of Energy around the Energy Star program. So we want to ensure that we are buying infrastructure that aligns with Energy Star principles, and it partners within Energy Star. And the final two pieces is more around disposal. Safe, and that's a really important key here, our word here is safe disposal of IT hardware and safe recycling. How do we dispose of, or making sure that we are disposing of hardware equipment in a way that's in a safe environment that aligns with practices of e-waste as a whole?
How is the EPA managing its information and technology resources? We will ask Malcolm Jackson, EPA's Chief Information Officer, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextJet? How is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security turning its one DHS vision into a reality? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And how is the DoD improving its business operations? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Hear from FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, DHS Undersecretary for Management Raphael Boris, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations Stephen Goldsmith, and Dave Winogren, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at DoD. Professor Joseph Nye and General Anthony Zinni on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century, and seven management imperatives that government leaders should pursue to be successful in an era of fiscal constraint. All of this and so much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Malcolm Jackson, Assistant Administrator of the Office of Environmental Information and Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. Malcolm, from an IT operations perspective, how have you sought to improve project management discipline and structure? And what are some of the steps you've taken to instantiate better process discipline tools and best practices in this area?
Well, effective project management is the cornerstone of any IT organization. It's something that I recognize. I come from a background where PMOs were critical to success. I've done large-scale project implementations and required a strong project management office. Within EPA, though, we did not have a PMO. And what we've just done is created our first project management office, and we have one person who is managing a large-scale initiative that covers the entire organization. And I want to touch on just one point. There's a bit of what I would call misnomer around project management, or rather project management office and projects or a project manager. When I talk about a project management office, it's an individual or an office that's managing an initiative that has multiple projects underneath it. Given the size of EPA and initiatives and the historical perspective of silos that existed. And as you think about it, as we're looking to move toward one EPA, one agency approach, this is the right time to institute a project management office, because we want to begin to develop and institute project management best practices within our agency. So that is a backdrop. We created a PMO office, and what we're doing now is developing the business processes around that and working with other offices within the agency to kind of align their work around major initiatives. This is something that's going to take a bit of time to get there. Change is not easy. That's not news to anyone I know. But I think we have a good individual leading it. I think we're learning from others. As I said, all great ideas don't come from EPA. So we're reaching across within our federal family partners. We're reaching across even within the private industry, looking for best practices, looking for templates, and looking for ways in which we can craft this model that works best for an EPA environment.
Yeah, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about analytics, Malcolm. The number and diversity of EPA programs require a full range of analytical techniques and approaches to manage them effectively. Therefore, increasing the use of analytics and enhancing the analytic capabilities of your office is critical. Would you elaborate on current efforts to strengthen analytic capabilities and maybe provide some examples?
Well, Ken, analytics is critical to any organization that has a large amount of data. As you think about the data collection components of what we do within EPA, we collect data from all of the states. We collect data from various cities and municipalities. And we take all that data and we try and shape it in a way that makes sense for people to make decisions on. We recognize that this is difficult. But we've gone a long way, and I believe in helping to advance the agency from that perspective. We believe that maps is one way of helping people to better interpret this information. So recently, just past year, we launched our EPA geospatial platform. EPA has been involved in geospatial for years, but we've had siloed approaches with to geospatial. So our regions, various regions, all had geospatial environments. Some of our program offices had geospatial environments. But what we're doing now is moving toward one geospatial repository, and we view this as a way of building collaboration. We view this as a way of sharing of information. We view this as a way of helping to move our organization in a direction where we're more collaborative, and you get to a better outcome because you have inclusion from a variety of different folks. And the analytical aspects of it, I think we're just beginning to touch on. Clearly, we've got the maps. I mean, we refer to this as our maps store. But I actually believe we're just beginning to touch on the possibilities here. I'm having conversations with a number of other federal agencies around how do we take this from just an agency perspective. So EPA has its own geospatial environment, but USDA has one. So does Energy. So what we want to do is move toward more of a federal geospatial analytical environment where we begin to share information more publicly from an analytical perspective.
Right. So this is an interesting transition. So we're going from analytics to collaboration now, and I love the term beyond the walls, right, that you may have coined earlier, or I know you spoke earlier about, right? You know, would you elaborate on your efforts to enhance and foster successful information sharing across the EPA community? So we talked about cities, states, universities, companies. What type of tools and techniques are you using to foster this collaboration?
Well, I look at collaboration in two ways. One is there's the internal aspects of collaboration, and I actually think there's opportunities for us to do enhanced collaboration. We're looking at different ways of doing that today. I actually strongly believe that the way people worked in the past and how they were effective in the past may not work for us in the future because there's less resources, there's way more information. And so how do you build these communities of collaboration? And I also believe that as you look at your workforce, you need to begin to retrain your workforce and help them understand the possibilities and the benefits of collaboration. So some of the things we're doing, as I mentioned earlier, around the geospatial platform, that's a collaboration. We've got the repository in place. Now we've got a plan to begin to move all of our regional offices and our program offices to one common repository. And we're creating communities within that geospatial platform, communities where you can share maps, communities where you can get engaged and involved with topics that might interest you. But that centers around the geospatial side of it. I think this is a good first step of this. Something else that we're beginning to do that I think will also help us is begin to look at collaboration tools outside of geospatial. And this gets into knowledge sharing. This gets into creating communities of interest. We're in the early stages of this. We have a tremendous opportunity in front of us. I see a world where you begin to use tools in the right type of business model that helped enable people to be better, to be smarter, to learn from each other, and to help and to serve their own interests that they may have from an environmental perspective.
Today, rapidly evolving technology increases an organization's IT vulnerability footprint. Would you elaborate on your IT security efforts? And more specifically, what types of cyber attacks or cyber threats are you facing and the steps you've taken to mitigate those?
Well, we have put, within EPA, we put together a cyber office. So we have a chief information security officer who was one of the first major hires I made coming into my role because I recognized the importance of cybersecurity and wanted to emphasize it within, or I'd rather amplify it within the agency. Cybersecurity is owned by everyone. It's everyone's responsibility. This is something that's not just the responsibility of one person, the chief information security officer or the chief information officer. This is something that needs to be owned by the entire agency. And our approach to this is around the policies and procedures that we're in the process of putting in place, the tools, the monitoring tools that we have in place. But in addition to that, which I think is just as important, is around education and awareness of cybersecurity. Just what does it mean when you have a threat or an incident? How do we respond to those incidents? How do we ensure that we're protecting our IT assets, our information, to ensure that it's not getting out to the wrong people, and that we are ensuring that we're meeting the needs of our mission as a whole? Your specific question around particular threats and things of that nature, I'd actually rather not go into that, because it's the reality is you don't want to play your cards.
Yeah.
How I would phrase it is, or view it rather, is that we want to ensure that we're protecting our assets to the appropriate level. We want to make sure that our employees are aware of what we mean by cybersecurity, and we want to make sure that they're educated and they help us in protecting our assets as a whole.
Well, I'd like to talk about another asset, and it's the folks that make you successful. It's the staff. And in an era of fiscal constraint, it's critical that an agency leader act with strategic intent and keep their workforce motivated. Reflecting on your leadership, how have you done that? How have you kept folks focused on the mission, the important mission of EPA, and kept them motivated in the face of sometimes dramatic, painful change?
The word you just used, change. Change is something that's going to always happen. It's always changes. If you wait a few minutes, it's coming. How I approach change is I embrace it. Now, around the whole question around motivating our staff and giving these difficult times, I really focus on communicating the value that federal employees bring to the American citizens, the job that they do, and how it aligns with the mission that we have as a whole. I do that through multiple ways. I have multiple communication vehicles in which I use. I do coffees with the CIO, where I bring in small groups of our employees and we sit down and talk about matters that may be on their mind. I also do a blog. I blog what things that are internal blog. I blog what things that we're working on, things that I'm involved in. So people are aware of the things that I'm either interested in or things that I'm working on, because there's a huge interest in what I do and what I'm in and where I'm going and activities that I have on a day-to-day basis. The other one, other piece of this that I think is really critical is around building leadership skills at multiple levels within my organization. I had a leadership retreat where I brought all of my managers together, and we talked about leadership skills, and we're working on developing leadership norms. I want to be a model within EPA for leaders within EPA. And I want others within EPA to look at us as a model that they want to aspire to be. So we're working and spending a lot of time on developing leaders within my organization as a whole. And then finally, the other thing that I think is really critical is around addressing difficult matters head on. The difficult matters of just the negative press that may be out there around federal employees, the difficult matters of around pay freezes. Let's have a discussion about that. And let's not avoid it. And I tell people all the time, I'm willing to discuss any matter. I will tell you what I can tell you. And if I can't tell you, I'll tell you I can't tell you. But I just think it's very important to be visible. I think it's very important to be transparent as much as you can be. And I think it's very important to listen, and listen very hard to employees so that they understand that you know what they're going through.
Yeah, that's important. And I want to get a sense of, to that end, how are you really focusing on ensuring that you have the most well-trained and highly effective and technical workforce?
Well, I actually, when I first came into, I signed a, within the first 6 months, we signed a talent management strategy that focuses on recruitment. It focuses on development, and I have a strong belief that if you focus on recruitment and development piece, the retention piece will take care of itself. So there's this three-legged stool there, but I think that my focus is on the first two. And what we've done is I have quarterly meetings with my leadership team, and part of that is talking about just our people. I didn't go through my five priorities, but talent management was one of the priorities that I have. And I took a hard look at our organization as a whole. I wanted to understand the demographics of it in terms of age demographics, because over the next 5 to 10 years, I'm going to have a large number, or expect to have a large number, of employees exiting because they'll be at retirement age. And the thought there being that they more than likely could retire. So how do we begin to cross-train those employees? How do we begin to do knowledge sharing, this institutional knowledge that we have? So there's this balancing act of learning what employees have today and how they work today, as you also begin to build a path to the future around collaboration and changing how we work in the future. So these are things that we discuss openly within the management team. These are things that we discuss openly within our staff, because I want to be able to paint a picture as to where we are today and where do I see that we're going. And it's a bit fuzzy. I recognize that. But at least people get a sense of comfort in knowing that, one, we're thinking about it, two, that we have a plan for it, and as we learn more, as we know more, we will communicate that plan. And if we do it, and we do it in the right kind of way, I think that we'll have a workforce that's well-trained and well-positioned to support the mission of our agency.
What does the future hold for information technology within the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency? We will ask its Chief Information Officer, Malcolm Jackson, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Each edition of the Business of Government magazine has as its focus the core mission of the IBM Center, connecting research to practice as a means to improve public management. We do this by bringing together insights and perspectives blended with an equal measure of practicality and reflection from an array of government leaders, public managers, thinkers, and practitioners. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In an era of fiscal contraction, today's leaders face unique challenges that present many difficult choices. It is a period that, while imposing many constraints, simultaneously confers as many opportunities to make a difference, introduce new ways of managing, explore pragmatic approaches, and pursue management imperatives that help government leaders perform in an ever-challenging, complex environment. In our latest edition, we bring you conversations with FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, outlining the Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen. Raphael Boris, DHS Undersecretary for Management, discusses how the department is turning its one DHS vision into a reality. Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York, discusses how the city is shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and efficient. We offer perspectives on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century from Professor Joseph S. Nye, Jr. and General Anthony Zinni, former commander of the U.S. Central Command. Our forum presents 7 management imperatives that government leaders must pursue to be successful in this new environment. All of this and so much more in the Spring-Summer 2011 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Malcolm Jackson, Assistant Administrator of the Office of Environmental Information and Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Ken Beecher. So, Malcolm, I have the pleasure of talking to all of our guests about the use of collaboration partnerships among agencies and the private sector to achieve mission results. I'm interested in how you're leveraging partnership to improve IT outcomes in EPA.
Well, public-private partnerships are critical to our success. Coming from a private sector, I lived in a world where they existed, and I know the benefits that they bring to the table. When you think about where we are as a federal government, when you think about where we are as an agency perspective, we need to look to realize better outcomes. Not to say we've been doing bad in the past. That's not what I'm suggesting. But I believe that we can do even better. And we can't be experts in everything. So what we should look to do is be experts in areas that are core competencies for us and leverage other organizations, either in the public sector or the private sector, who may have core competencies that may be better than ours. I think if you do that and you marry the two up in the appropriate manner, you get great outcomes. And I'm looking for great outcomes. And I think this is a world where, or a mindset that we should have across the entire federal government. It's an opportunity in front of us. It's an opportunity that we really need to take advantage of.
You know, there's a lot of talk of social networking being used in the marketplace. Malcolm, we just talked a little bit about partnership outside of EPA. And as you mentioned earlier, there are a lot of great ideas that EPA staff have amongst themselves. So what role do you feel social networking plays in your business area?
Well, we're forward leading from a social network perspective. The administrator is on Facebook. We have a number of our leaders are out leveraging social networking tools. We have quite a few employees who are leveraging social networking tools. So it's a way in which you can speak to your constituents and individuals who are actually interested in your in environmental matters, but it's also a way to learn and listen. As I mentioned earlier, listening is critical. As leaders for our environment, being EPA leaders of our environment, we need to listen and learn from what some of our stakeholders are interested in. We need to listen and learn into some of their concerns. Social media offers that. It's a vehicle for receiving input. It's a vehicle for communicating. As I said, we're forward-leaning with it, but I think there's still opportunities that exist for us, opportunities where we can be even better, opportunities where we can learn more, opportunities where we can receive feedback and leverage that feedback, incorporate that feedback into the work we do in helping to meet our mission as an agency as a whole.
Right, and you said that, you know, change isn't easy. You also mentioned that many employees do use the social networking skills. So what obstacles are there for those employees that aren't using them?
It's interesting. I find this that when you look at the demographics of our employees, the younger Generation Y, Generation X, they're very open to using social media tools. The generation that, and I'll pick on myself, baby boomers, not as open toward using them. So what one of the things that I have to do is, and I say I am referring to me within my organization, and referring to my staff, and referring to other leaders within the agency, is help people to realize the benefits from using social media and how it's going to help enable them to do their job, how it's going to help enable them to meet the mission of our agency in a way that's more compelling for people who consume environmental information.
So what other emerging technologies are you looking at?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, we've talked a little bit about mobile. We've talked a little bit about cloud computing. I actually believe those in the near term are some of the emerging technologies that we need to spend a bit of time on and do some work, because there's tremendous opportunities with both. If you think about mobile technology, early responders going out to an environmental incident of some sort and being able to pull out a mobile device and be able to access cloud-based applications to be able to do data collection, to be able to take pictures and be able to send that information back. That improves our data quality. That improves our response time. That just improves the quality or the product that we deliver as an agency. And in making that information even more readily available from a timeliness perspective, I think those are the opportunities that are new term for us. Beyond that, it's difficult to say. Back in the day when you could put together a five-year IT plan, there was a time when you could do that, when you were mainframed and the speed to change was a bit slower. Now it's so fast, you've got to be a little bit, you got to respond quickly, but you can't go out beyond more than 18 months or so with any type of technology development. Challenge being, it changes too quickly. And it goes back to my earlier statement, is we're moving in a direct